Welcome to Nexstar's 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African-American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of Nexstar's 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all-African-American, all-female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning in to the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888. In episode 21, we will interview an actor from the upcoming Tyler Perry Studios Netflix movie about the 6888 Battalion. My guest tonight is actor Milana Jackson. Welcome, Milana.
Hey, Doc.
I always like to start with a few interesting facts. First, You play Abby Noel Campbell in the upcoming Tyler Perry Studios Netflix film, The 6888. And second, you've acted in a variety of films and television shows. These include American Skin, Arrest and Trial, Cold Case, Aquarius, Strike Back, Shadow Warfare, NCIS, Rizzoli and Isle, Chicago PD, Animal Kingdom, and my all-time favorite, How to Get Away with Murder.
Yes.
That's impressive. So let's talk about the 6888 Netflix movie and your role. Mm-hmm. How did Netflix and Tyler Perry Studios become interested in 6888?
Oh, it's interesting because while we were, I do have to say, give this disclaimer, there are certain things that obviously they want to save for the actual PR for the film. But what I can share about how this story came about is a story that was told to me personally by Nicole Avant, who is one of the producers to the film. She brought the project to Tyler. And he, I imagine, having seen the story, I don't think he said that he was familiar with the battalion prior to Nicole sharing. It was like a sizzle reel that she shared with him. So prior to that, I'm not sure if he was familiar with the story, but I would imagine after some cajoling and coaxing from Nicole and the other producers that are involved with it, that they decided this would be a great follow-up to their relationship with Tyler from A Jazz Man's Blues.
Okay.
So Jazz Man's Blues was the first project that I did with Tyler. And this particular project, because it's the same time period, I'm sure was something that needed to resonate. There's a lot of artists we like to show all aspects, all facets of our creativity. So to go from a film that's set in the 1940s to do a war film in 1940s is a huge feat. And he also has the kind of resources to support that kind of feat. Period pieces are extremely expensive because everything has to be built or have previously been manufactured. So the only things that kind of exist in that lane are typically vehicles, right? So a lot of people collect cars. And so I know that a couple of the cars from Jazz Man's were part of the studio. But this particular film, obviously, is you have war vehicles. And because his studio happens to be on the lot of a former Confederate Army base, it just felt like the most serendipitous moment. From my perspective, I'll say, from my perspective, just being reminded of how precious the history is and for it to be filmed in an area where we weren't even allowed to exist, to serve, to be of service, and we're actually doing that was pretty dope. That's my take on how Tyler got involved. Now, how Netflix got involved is a whole other thing I have no knowledge of, but I do know that they brought it to Tyler and then he obviously wrote the script and then wanted to tell the story.
So this kind of is a good segue to my next question. The movie is not a documentary, but rather historical fiction. And
Yes.
so it's my understanding that Tyler or someone in his in the studios read the article by historian Kevin Himmel, and that was something that triggered his interest in the story. But what's the premise? As you understand, what's the premise of the movie? Because there are 855 women, so they could, you know.
Right. And I'm will only comment on the information that I have. And because Nicole told me this personally, that's the only reason I would even tell this story. It was not even like hearsay. She personally told me that that's how she brought this project to him. And the idea that, when you're having a story about a whole battalion or a war, if there's always has it's always about the hero's journey or the heroine's journey. So it's told through the lens of a real woman, Mrs. King, Lena King, who is actually still a surviving
Right.
member of 6888. So she's there
And li lives
now.
in lives in Las Vegas. She just
Las
turned
Vegas.
100, I think, in either January or February. Yep.
She did, Doc. Yes, she did. So it's her story, and it really follows her experience with enlisting in the army, the WACS, which is the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. And it shows how she was introduced to the regime of being a soldier under the leadership of Charity Adams.
Okay.
Charity was the inspiration that she saw to let her know that this was something that a Black woman could actually do, a Black young woman, because at the time, I want to say that Lena was maybe 17, 18, so it's right out of high school, to go and enlist. And then that's how she's introduced to all of these women, and I am one of those women, and I am Charity's XO. So I
So in the XO, the audience might not know what an XO is.
You want to go ahead and tell her you the bag. Executive officer. So I'm the executive officer. And that's just basically I'm her right-hand woman. I'm the my duties involve, everything from really interviewing the ladies, getting them prepped together for the presentation of the captain. So it's like the right hand man, second in command. And my character is Lieutenant Abby Noel Campbell, who was actually Charity Adams' real XO, real executive officer, ace, best friend, all of that in real life. And she talks about her, she mentions her a few times in her book, One Woman's Army. And I had the pleasure of meeting Charity's children and some of her relatives, and they talked to me even about, out of all the people they remember, Abby was one of the friends she talked about the most. So I think that is interesting that I would be a part of this project in this capacity, because it's just something that I never had envisioned for myself, was to portray an army vet to this degree.
Okay. Well, what do we who was Abby Noel Campbell as a person? We know that she was a right hand soldier for Charity Adams, but let's tell us a little bit about her
Yeah.
and the kind of work and well, I want to know a little bit about her, and then I'm going to ask you some other questions about developing her character.
So this is a perfect way for me to even talk about the development stages, because there's not, she wasn't unfortunately able to tell her own story, and no one has told her story. So I needed to create as much as I could on my own based on the very limited information that was presented to me. So most of the film you see really the backstory to Lena's character as opposed to Abby's character. But from the things that I garnered, research and just deductive reasoning, leadership is clearly a huge key component, because to be given the responsibility of preparing a battalion of women from all different backgrounds, there has to be some keen leadership skills. A fearlessness. This is a time when women really didn't have many choices that provided us security. So that is something that, you know, obviously to be courageous enough to join a war, to become a soldier for a war, there has to be an element of courage and determination. I added some, you know, other key components, like, you know, being a great teacher, being a supportive friend. Obviously, there are elements to the film for theatrical purposes that you'll see myself and Charity, you know, bond. So I needed to create an essence of compassion for this very arduous feat. You're talking about, again, a time where women weren't even seen as being capable of serving with white women. These were segregated units, which is why they were, and segregated meaning women of color. So not just Black women, but I'm sure Native women, you know, Latinas. There were obviously biracial women. So, you know, there were a lot of experiences that we needed to help create a plan, because nothing was set up for this battalion. You know, there wasn't a plan of action that it had to be created by these women. There wasn't any barracks set up, so that it had to be built, set up, and livable. You're talking about, you know, conditions where there's no heat and it's in the dead of winter. There's no running water, obviously, because if there's no heat, there's no working pipes. And in a time where it was an abandoned school, so they had to transform this building into something that's livable, as well as something that will protect them from the enemy, because it's still war. These are all things that I kind of pulled just from my own arsenal of how to develop a character, and then incorporate some of my own stuff, so that you can see more than just a woman that's donning a costume that is spouting military jargon, but a real human being, a woman whose son will hopefully get a chance to see this film and be proud that there's a movie that represents his mother in a way and honors his mother in a way that America never did. And so those are all things that were important to me. So to segue this into the next part, which is what my process is, or how to develop this a character where there may not be a lot of information. I watched a ton of documentaries on the time period, the 40s, the war, America's contribution to the war, women's contribution. There was I want to say an interview that I saw. I can't remember who the journalist was that was interviewing Charity, but it was one of the few pieces of work that I was able to see just on Charity Adams. And so, you know, you just kind of pull and pluck from other characters that I've also played, that I was able to utilize for Abby. And I feel good about what many of us brought to the story, but particularly those of us whose narrative hasn't already been written in the history books, or it's not already been shared. So you still want the audience to connect with these women. You still want the audience to believe that this is historical fiction, you know? So I wanted to do as much work that I could in a short period of time. Now, one thing that I will say, because I had a, I don't, I, you mentioned Strike Back as being one of my credits. I've played someone who has served for their country, right? I've done that before, but there was a lot of action. So I had to know how to shoot. I had to know how to, you know, change a mag, dislodge a jammed gun, you know, all in action, all on camera, all so it's fluid motion. It's an extension of my hand. I had to know how to properly shoot. I found out, this is a fun fact. I was thinking about this, like some fun facts about myself. One of the fun facts is I'm ambidextrous. So I swing with my right and I shoot with my left. And I learned that. I was like, Hollywood taught me how to actually shoot a weapon, not Chicago. it taught me how to literally be able to.
I guess there's some irony in there. Yeah.
It really is. It really is.
Yep.
But none of that, honestly, were things that I needed to apply to the film, but I had already come equipped with that knowledge. So I'm carrying the courage and the confidence of knowing how to defend myself amongst an army of my peers. My character is a lieutenant, so I'm an officer. And there are other, you know, women that were officers in battalion too, but to have the responsibility to be in charge of them in this capacity was something that also I had to prepare for. So I need to do that in the way that makes sense for me. And that's studying other people and watching them perform in a way that to me seems authentic and real.
As a 6888 descendant myself, it'll be interesting for me, this whole issue of documentary versus historical fiction, it'll be interesting to me when I see the movie to see in what ways reality diverges. You know, because I think historical fiction is kind of an interesting genre. I interviewed Kaia Alderson, who wrote the book Sisters in Arms about the 6888. And you know, sometimes when I think, reflect on it, when I take what I know to be fact in that book and say that the stories get interwoven in my head, because she was really, really good at sticking to the facts. But, you know, you kind of merge characters together, which is the luxury you have in historical fiction. You don't just have to have one character. You can have one person whose story in the movie represents a combination of stories.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the interesting part about it.
You also, one of the things that I feel like I am at liberty to say is there are other women who join the army for various reasons, and those stories need to be told too. Not everybody is joined the army, particularly then. Not all women wanted to join because they wanted to secure their future. They joined to get away from abuse, to escape the kind of life that was presented to them as their only option. So right. It's like, why not find a way to protect myself so that I have the security of a troop or a battalion? I have the security I have an extended family now, so that I don't have to worry about this abusive past. You know, like, you meet all kinds of women who are telling some story about why this mission was so vital and crucial to their lives, and unbeknownst to them at the time. At the time, it was the experience of becoming a soldier was going to be, you know, a monumental step. But to then find out that this is the mission, it's like, oh, wow, this is, you know, an international mission, which is also was very foreign to all of these women, because none of them had ever traveled overseas. So to then be sent there under the conditions that they were exposed to, that Charity talks about a lot in her book, you know, to see that visually is something that we've never seen in cinema. You've never seen a film. I've searched, if anybody knows of a film of Black soldiers that are female, please let me know, because I didn't find one. So the fact that this is the first, I'm very optimistic there won't be the last.
Absolutely. It's interesting. I've interviewed a number of descendants of 6888ers, and so you're right about the limited opportunities. The stories are different. I've talked to someone who had a college degree, but there are only two types of jobs she could get where she lived: a housekeeper Or in her case, she decided to be a lift operator. Okay, that's what she was doing. And ultimately, she actually, the iconic picture of a woman standing behind Charity Adams that people have over the years thought was Abby Noel Campbell. That was actually Mary Frances Kearney. That's the person I'm talking about.
Yes, I'm very. I had to educate myself on that because I was under the impression, based on some of the information that was released online, that that was Abby. But I knew that these two women looked nothing alike, and I said clearly, this is not a Black woman who was identified. This is Abby because they don't look anything alike at all. But here's this is where creative license comes in because it's still, a film for not just. To educate our audience, but to entertain. So you do have to kind of combine storyline.
Characters, right.
So I stand beside and behind Charity in a lot of capacities where Abby may be perceived sometimes in the positions that Mary had, So I can't verify that, but my spirit is just telling me this. My spirit is telling me this. So I am prepared for people to reveal to me that that is not Abby, that was Mary, and I need to put it on record. I know I'm
Right.
aware of this.
I could even I
This
could
is
even
not in
tell
the
you
script,
I could even
unfortunately.
tell you which of her relatives that would actually come from.
But no, I will say to the relative of Barry, just know that I said a prayer for her family as well as for Abby's family. So I did my best to represent both women collectively well.
And that's the historical fiction, right?
That
That's
is
the
it.
But other women I've talked to joined, like my mother was working for Social Security at the time. And then she wrote a short memoir, and she was musing one day, looking out the window, saying, there's got to be a better life than this. So she called one of her girlfriend and said, Ruth, I planned our future. We're joining the army. And Ruth joined. They didn't end up in the same, I don't think Ruth was in the 6888, but they both went and joined. And you have other people who I've heard stories of, well, we lived in the South and all I could do was be a maid or a person of ill repute. And so I didn't want to be limited. And so a lot of it was, and then others are like what some families said that they had brothers who were in the service, and one person had a brother who was injured and ultimately died. But it was that strong sense of, well, the countries that, despite what's going on here, we've got a bigger enemy.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So it's, and the spirit of adventure, you're correct. I mean, that's one thing that struck. All of them were very courageous. I mean, if you think about it, to be a young Black woman in the 40s and to join the army, at first was difficult. It was hard to even get in because of all the limitations they placed on Black women. But to do that and then run the risk of, I might end up overseas. I know when my mother joined, all of my uncles were in the service already. So my mother said, well, I won't go overseas. She said, I promise you I won't go overseas. So I'll be safe over here. Well, she went overseas.
This is what I was going to say, which I'm glad you mentioned that, as I forgot, is that they were also not allowed to utilize any weaponry outside of their hands. So, so there's no guns, obviously. No real true combat training, in terms of protective elements outside of judo, if I'm not mistaken, is the martial art that they began to participate in. And
They actually had full military training down at Fort Oglethorpe, but they could, but no women, not Black women, no women were allowed to actually were
area.
issued guns.
Yes, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. They weren't allowed to carry that, to carry a weapon. They weren't issued any guns. So it's like, so what means do we have in order to protect ourselves? And just the most common is just hand-to-hand combat, which I actually love, and hope that at some point in the next story or whatever story is told, is you get to see women utilizing our skill sets outside of guns. See that all the time.
We could use that some more in America as a whole, but that's a different conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And then one last thing you mentioned, I just wanted to, if it's okay for me to say this, is you were, you had mentioned the desire to join because of family members. And that was a key component. I would say for my character, Abby, is I found through research that she had two brothers who were both involved with the military. One was a Tuskegee Airman, if I'm not mistaken. So right. There's clearly the exposure of an industry that lends itself to encourage, you know, other families to benefit in a way that America never really allowed women to see options that were deemed as being equal or even beneficial to their future, you know? So outside of just being a wife, but being a citizen, an American citizen who could vote, you know, who has civic duties, who wants to create the kind of future that is brighter than what's set up for them, you know, that lends itself to making history in a way that is monumental, and they happen to do it in the 6AAA.
Yeah, yeah. So the film has a stellar cast. I'm sure the audience would love to hear who else is starring in the film.
Yeah, it's pretty dope to say that Captain Charity Adams is portrayed by Kerry Washington.
And she's all over TikTok with that, too.
I know she is. She loves her some TikTok. Yeah. And Susan Sarandon, who I'm a huge fan of as well.
She plays? Is she Eleanor Roosevelt?
The role of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Okay. And
Mary McLeod Bethune is portrayed by Oprah Winfrey. And a fun fact about Mary McLeod Bethune is I remember being in fourth grade, and I was in a new school, and we had a class assignment, very typical during this time, where you have to write, you know, a biography on a historical figure. And my mother was like, you know, she had the highest education she acquired outside of just her street, her PhD in the streets was high school. But she had the fortitude and the knowledge to push me academically, and was like, you cannot do Harriet Tubman. You cannot do a paper on Sojourner Truth. No, you know, like, Martin Luther King, like, it cannot be someone that I already know. Educate me, school me. And Mary McLeod Bethune was the woman that I had found. I thought she was interesting visually. I thought her contribution to society in America was interesting. So to be in a film that is actually being showcasing really truly what she accomplished for our community, I just thought it was so serendipitous. It just warmed my heart to know that I was in the same, I was in alignment, so to speak. Like, I was in that wavelength. And my mother didn't know. She was like, who is this Mary McLeod Bethune? So I did I forget the paper what I got. I'm sure I probably did great on it, because the teacher probably was shocked. I chose to do Mary McLeod Bethune. But the beautiful thing about relationships, and this is what I wanted to say, when you say, you know, who's in the film, which other stars in the film, there are people who we really haven't seen in this capacity. So these aren't women kind of doing the same kinds of things that you're used to seeing us do, especially particularly it being a period piece, but it's also, these are historical figures. So I don't think that there's ever been a movie that's had all of these women collectively coming together to make an impact on our lives and the lives of other Americans in such a poignant way. And that's really what Mary did. She and Eleanor had a professional relationship, and, you know, to be able to have a through line to the White House in the 40s.
Right.
It's powerful.
Absolutely.
So of
Absolutely.
course he's gonna get a powerful woman to play that role.
Yes. Well, who else? As soon as someone said that, oh, I heard she was in it, say, she's playing Mary McLeod. That's over.
That's over. Come on, man.
That's
People's
gonna
have
be
to talk
that's
if
gonna be
they think
over.
I'm good.
The commanding presence. Yes.
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 And that's what I saw. That's what I was drawn to. I was introduced to the power of sisterhood. Because she's a member of a sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, and my character Abby, as well as Charity Adams, they were both members of this same sorority. So I was just introduced at such a young age to the value of team of teamwork
Okay.
and sisterhood. For on the male side, because there are some famous men, Sam Waterston, it plays Eleanor's husband, and I actually worked on Law and Order. That was the last TV show that I worked on, and Sam Waterston is what have been on that show since the beginning, I would imagine.
Yep. He's been on every, yes.
Yeah, you're
Yeah,
talking about.
the original Law and Order series, not the spin-off
Yes.
set.
No,
Yeah.
the original Law and Law and Order series, which is that's like a rites of passage for a lot of artists, because we all essentially said no, Law and Order, it's on every day. It's multiple times a day. But also it's been on for years, even though there's been cast changes. Sam Waterston has been a part of it, just like Mariska Hargitay has been a part. And
Yep.
so the fact that I worked on the show, but didn't work directly with him, and then God chose to put me in this project and with him again, I just feel like this is all, I call these God winks. And this is God winking all over this project. And then the last person people may be familiar with is doggone, I want to say his name is Dean Norris, and he is from Breaking Bad. Is that his that that's the name right? Dean Norris.
Is it Chris Norris?
Lord Jesus.
Okay.
He's from Breaking Bad, and a lot of people did. Yeah, Dean Norris. Dean Norris. Yeah, Dean Norris. I'm trying to figure out the name. Hank. He played Hank, the brother-in-law, the one who was destined to take down, doggone it. What is his name? What's the actor's?
I'm not familiar with that show. So, I mean, I've heard of it, but I'm
Bryan Cranston. You're not
okay.
familiar with Breaking Bad?
I've heard of it, but I've not ever watched it. That's
Oh
the
my
difference.
God. You're talking about some amazing television from my perspective. So to work, actually be in scenes with Dean and Carrie, and growing up in this business, I've been in the business a very long time. My very first feature studio film feature, because I had auditioned and it worked in some independent films. Being from Chicago, a lot of student films from Columbia College, and my very first audition was Save the Last Dance. So I didn't wind up getting the role that I auditioned for that, but I did. I was featured in the film in the scene where Carrie comes in. To then be standing beside her is biblical. It's like going from the background to the foreground, just through patience, perseverance, hard work, prayer, faith, tenacity, investments, support, all of the things that are necessary to survive in any competitive industry, but particularly the entertainment industry. It's just really lets me know that this project, it's changed my life in a way that no other project has ever done.
Well, that's great to hear. And when you get to actually do, after the film comes out, you can actually do the interviews on television and tell all of the story. It's going to be it'll be some great
Yeah.
interviews.
Yeah, one last star. I have to mention her because she's the one playing Lena
Oh,
King.
that's what I was going to ask you next. Yeah.
Yes. Is Ebony Obsidian, and Ebony is the one of the lead actresses, one of the starring actresses to the TV show Sisters, that's also part of Tyler Perry Studios. So for her to be able to lead in this film is huge for her. It's so huge, and I'm so happy and proud to be a part of this project with her.
This is great. Sounds like you'll get some good bonding, new experiences, and who knows where this will lead, these connections will
Absolutely.
lead. So what were some of the key challenges you experienced in either preparing for or performing the role of Abby Noel Campbell?
One of the main challenges of historical fiction is there are the authentic parts that you have to create that don't current that aren't weren't presented, weren't available to me. So that's a challenge. I like to say that there was only one film that I can think of off of the top of my head that I actually completed to production. So I've worked on other films, but sometimes they don't get the funding or they do a cast switch. And so I'm not including those experiences. But there's a film, Blood Didn't Sign My Name, which was based off of a real story. And I played the wife of a slain veteran who just returned from the war in North Carolina. And the local white man killed him because they believed that he was flirting with a white woman. And so it's very much in the vein of Emmett Till, and it shows this is the 70s though, the early 70s. So this is post the civil rights era. Just shows how these kinds of things have affected people from all backgrounds and all ages, racism. And so the challenge, one of the challenges of working with this film is obviously racism hasn't didn't die with the wars, right? So
Not in the least bit.
that component is always going to be a factor that we as in a particularly an all Black production has to contend with. So that could be in, while we're filming it in certain parts of America, or we're filming it, we did do a stint in London, So there are things that you kind of confronted with that just remind you that this is what we're dealing with today. Then imagine what these women dealt with during in the 40s, sexism, racism, ageism even. It's not a lot, many of them were much younger than I was, and most of the women that are filming that are portraying these women, so we have the privilege of experience and we have the privilege of wisdom. And we were still kind of dealing with challenges of just trying to manage expectations of other people. Like that's a challenge. Everybody wants their story told, and it might not be told in this story. We don't know what the final product is gonna look like. We don't know what elements aren't going to be. I don't know. I'll say that. I don't know what elements are going to be showcased as authentic. So, for me, that was a challenge. It's like I don't want to disappoint any ancestors. I don't want any of my people to feel like
You
their
try to tell me, you try to tell me you're superstitious.
family.
Don't want those ancestors visiting you.
Why you didn't tell my story this way? I'm telling you, I've did my best to. And then also, like, here's the thing about, if you're talking about, like, there's plenty of war films, right? With male soldiers. But again, you're talking about at least, you just so let's just say hundreds of women of color portraying soldiers. So that means all of those costumes had to be built. They had to, the wool had to be milled. I talked to the costumer, the head of the costume department, the key. Her name is Karen Wagner, and just all of the uniforms, the insignia, the patches, the way that the hats themselves, the way that they're, constructed, the coats, the undergarments, like it's all authentic to the period. And so again, every day we're putting on sometimes thermals because it's cold, you know what I mean? And girdles and the wool uniforms, and they're not pants, a lot of them with skirts. So you're talking stockings, thigh highs with garters, the shoes, they're your sneakers and gym shoes. You're talking hard bottom heels.
No comfortable insoles.
No, not at all. And no, we may have the liberty of Hollywood allowing us to be able to cheat by wearing something like a thermal, but I don't think these women were able to wear thermals under their uniforms during that time,
Now, you filmed in England. Did you go film in France and Scotland also, or was the filming done all in England?
Yeah, it was
And
the journey. The journey only included this stint in Birmingham, and I believe because there's a lot of infamous
right.
depictions of seeing Europeans respond to all of these women that they have to, they have that they've never been exposed to in this capacity, because you're talking about a troop of women, trained and presented in a way that is in conflict with their ideology of Black Americans, their belief system of, being seeing Blacks as being worthy of slavery, being worthy of being subjected to being enslaved. And yet you see the antithesis of that. You see authority and power and a commanding presence and respect of themselves and belief that they are capable of marching alongside their fellow soldiers who happen to be white or who happen to be female, white females. Like this is something that you only really see in the film that is set in England. So we shot in Birmingham, Watford. I was privileged enough to shoot in the city of London. There was some buildings that some internal sh some interior shots that I love, because I love shooting on location. It's one of my favorite things about filmmaking. And this was the first time that I've ever been on a film that shot out of the country. I've been in on TV shows, and that's pretty cool. But to see all of these Black British actresses and be able to be a part of this in a way that they don't have a historical connection to. They're not historically connected to these women, just in the whole African diaspora element of just being a part of the Black family. But technically, they don't, they I'm sure I doubt it very seriously if the queen made sure that they knew that story. We didn't know the story, so I'm sure the queen didn't make it a part of their educational curriculum. But to be exposed to it in that way was also uplifting and inspiring. But yeah, we only got to shoot in London. That's it.
Yeah, the Legacy Tour will be in Birmingham on the 22nd of June, I think, 21st, 22nd of June.
Yeah.
We're going to be honored by the Lord Mayor of Birmingham. And they actually, I think, recently named a street after Charity Adams.
Oh, that's so
Yeah,
cool.
yeah. So it's going to be an exciting
Yeah.
tour.
That
So
is
tell
an exciting tour.
me, it is. Some of us are going to start off in Scotland and go all the way through. Others are joining in Birmingham. So, what do you think makes the experiences of the 6888 such a compelling story?
What makes it such a compelling story beyond the things that I've just mentioned, the topics that I've mentioned, going against this?
A lot of the objective is to reach out to a younger generation. What do you think may make it compelling? Why should a young person watch this film or be interested in this story? I should be interested in the story, yes.
You've never seen a woman or women being led to fulfill a mission that did not involve magic, did involve the Marvel universe, that's not a part of animation. These are real, true, regular women. These are women with no military background. The
Right.
majority have very limited to no military background and accomplish something that they could only accomplish together. So to me, I feel like it's not even just in support of what of the industry, meaning like the military industry, but the power of us coming together to accomplish something that no one believed we could do. That is an inspirational tale. That's a story that just really reminds us of how powerful we are as women. So a young girl, not knowing this, believing that particularly now in the time, this is 2023, and the nation is determined to erase our history, our contributions, our involvement in society that pushed this country forward. It also calls us to be regressive too. We didn't
Yeah.
all our history ain't pushing us forward. But it is most of it that is being eliminated, that's being extracted from the curriculum. Because it's not just 6888 is being highlighted, but there are contributions to society as human beings. Because most of these women, after completing these missions that were deemed to be impossible, they had completely given up the idea that anybody could fulfill these missions, right? So they were given a time frame of 6 months. They were able to do it in 3 because they worked together, they had a plan. And to me, I would think just in, this is a, I'm a woman. I deferred my enrollment in college, so I didn't complete my higher education. But just in my mind, if there are a group of women that came together to complete a mission that went from they can't, no one can do it, so we'll just give them 6 months, so we're going to set them up to fail, to not only that they accomplished it, but they did it at half the time. They should have been in leadership in a way that completely transformed the South, transformed America, transformed the way that Black women and women of color, the way that we're seen as, and it's kind of a divisive, manner, like the stereotype of us not being able to work together. The idea that a man has to come in and get involved in some capacity to complete the mission, like, Hidden Figures, it was a beautiful story that was told. So obviously it encouraged a lot of women to become mathematicians. There's now a program in the military called the Space. So is it called, what is it called? The Space Corps or the Space Unit. So it's now just, it's now girls are able to see that they can utilize their education in a way that gives them access to history and access to, what am I trying to say? Access to
Is this a STEM-based
a
program?
career. Would you say?
Is it a STEM-based program?
I don't know. I just found out
Science.
about this weekend. I just found out about this. It's a new unit. So it's not the Army, it's not the Navy, obviously Marine and the Air Force. It's the Space Corps. It's like a new unit. And it is, I would imagine, more science and tech involved than the kind of combat that we're just used to seeing when it comes to the army. And so, sometimes we want to be involved with the way that our country is run in a way that doesn't just lend itself to us cleaning up or cooking or sewing, doing domestic style work, but to actually being able to utilize our knowledge and our education to be engineers, to, do coding, to do cyber, protection, just AI, just things that are more progressive. And a lot of times it just takes for a young girl to see that leadership, what leadership act being executed looks like. And it's like just taking the step to do it. I feel
It's actually
like
called, it's called Space Force.
Space Force. Thank
Yes,
you. I was like,
Space
where is
Force.
it? Space Force. So like the Air Force Space Force. So, obviously this did, we have advanced so heavily with technology that there has to be an area where we can contribute that will probably take a while for us to garner the kind of exposure that we need in order to advance in our careers. But that could potentially be a pathway that could possibly just this film particularly could be a gateway to being a tool of inspiration. I know when I found out about the 6AAA, I found out about it as a grown woman, but my second grade teacher, I when my mother shared this information with her, she was so excited because she was familiar with it. She was would tell her students about 6AAA and this battalion. She felt it was important for her class to know about this particular historical event, and she was fired. The Chicago public school system didn't feel like it was a part of the curriculum, and therefore you're not adhering to the rules, So if they're already extracting history from the books that exist currently, and then you don't have teachers aren't either aware or able to share, then how will younger generations find out about it? And that's the thing I love about film is there is power in the media and its power in movies, particularly ones like this, where they most of us, are black and brown.
Right. So let's segue and talk about you. You're a native of Chicago, and you've attended Howard, Cal State Fullerton, University of Illinois Chicago, and then lastly UCLA. So
Yes.
tell me about your background and career, and why you decided to pursue acting.
Well, I always feel like acting chose me. I decided to pursue it on a professional level because I wanted to do reach more people outside of Chicago. I wanted to do more film. Film is what I fell in love with first. The medium that I fell in love with first was a movie called Sparkle. And I knew as a kid, I have a conversation with my cousin quite a bit about how I had already articulated at three that I wanted to be a star and on TV. Like I want to do that. And it took me a while to really figure out how to get involved with it because I didn't have anyone in my family who knew how to do it. So, Chicago is a theater-based city, very similar to it's very highly respected theater community. And you have to work your way up in the theater community to really garner any kind of stage time. And I was very impatient. I didn't want to wait until I was in my 30s to be able to star in a production. in Chicago. So I left school after I had failed my final. And I remember, I'm gonna tell you, Doc, I remember I was, I was pretty, I was a naturally a smart, attentive student. So I A's, straight A's, B's, I had a high GPA, all of that. But when I had this math final and I was looking at this test and I couldn't remember how to add, subtract, divide, or multiply. I didn't know which formula. I didn't know what was happening. I just went blank. I realized the enthusiasm for furthering my education had completely diminished. And I had a real talk with my mother about what I wanted to do and how I wanted to pursue it professionally. And the prayers that I had had all those years began to manifest. God began to bring people, attract. I was attracting people that happened to be in the business to some capacity. So my mother, happened to meet somebody who was working on a major feature film and had an actual speaking part. So he was able to provide me with some information of, okay, if you want to do this professionally, then you are going to be going up against people who have professional marketing tools. So you need a headshot, you need a resume, you need to take classes, you need to have an agent. And then you start beginning to meet more people. You began to meet more, like-minded artists and actors and actresses and models and people who are in that same field who see your enthusiasm or are attracted to the light. And so they want to contribute with their referrals. And then you began to have your own, now arsenal of resources that you're sharing with people. And so I am the quintessential actress, artist who did not get trained classically, but failed forward multiple times on sets, learned on the job how to, what standing on my mark was, what, real sides look like, which are pieces, scenes from the movies that they'll have you, or from the TV show or the play or whatever you're auditioning for, that they'll have you prepare so that you can present to something called a casting director or a producer, a director that's, involved with the project. I learned the true from, the true,
The craft.
yeah, the not, yes, the craft through the work experience. And I will say, coming from the South Side of Chicago, because I always have to remind not just my audience, but also other people in this industry. It's a lot of praise goes to Ivy League universities that have MFA programs or BFA programs. And that typically is the way that a lot of Black actors and actresses are able to burst into this very difficult industry and succeed, right? Because not everybody that goes that path has the same level of success, obviously. But considering I didn't have any of that, no nepotism, no cronyism, nothing, no direct correlation to this business, and yet I am working alongside all of the people that I mentioned who I am fully aware of their resume. I'm fully aware of their contributions to this industry, to the creative arts. And I'm still able to stand alongside these people and feel confident about my contribution. I have to say, Chicago contributed to that. I have to say, all working as a background artist to a co-star, to a guest star, to a guest lead, to a leading lady, to a co-leading lady, like that is just as powerful as if I had gone to a Yale, Juilliard, Tisch, North Carolina, any Eurocentric based Ivy League university. I say I would feel like that's all equivalent. None is greater than the others, just the pathway to the same destination, which is to really appreciate and love the craft. And I've done that from the beginning, because I knew from the beginning that there was a skill set that had to be developed. And I did a lot of acting classes and private coaching. My most recent, particularly for this film, particularly for Jazzman's Blues, which I then brought that to 6888, was I did a stint at Susan Batson acting school. She's one of the few world-renowned, maybe the only one that I know of, world-renowned acting coaches, her and her son, Carl Ford. So I've trained like the unconventional route. And that's been also
you just didn't end up with a couple $100,000 worth of debt.
Absolutely. Now here, let me tell you, Doc, because it took me a minute. I have to say this. I'm sharing something. It took me a second to be able to embrace my journey, because the industry will have you believe that Harvard University, Yale University, any Ivy League unit, Brown, these are the key components to success in America, in spite of the fact that we've seen people not follow that path and still succeed. But clearly that's a marketing tool too. If you invest in my university, hundreds of thousands of dollars after 3-4 year program, or tens of thousands of dollars, depending on how long you're there. You know, obviously I want to see a return in my investment, right? I want to believe that I am making a wise choice to having an actual career behind that, as opposed to I'm going to incur all this debt and then still wind up in unemployment, doing a menial labor job, like my ancestors, you know. But for me, I didn't go that path. I didn't actually even apply to any of the Ivy League theater programs because I didn't know anything about them. And then when I found out about them, I'd already invested so much time working my way to the top that I didn't believe that I might be accepted into the program. So, you know, to know that I actually didn't need it, like a lot of casting directors told me, a lot of casting directors, I have to say, could encourage me to continue on the path that I was on. And then to actually be in this position is really just a reminder that all of our paths are just different. Our paths to success are just all different.
That's true. And that's true, not just in acting, that's true in life.
Life.
All aspects of life. Absolutely.
All aspects. And I don't think we talk about that enough. I think I deferred my enrollment. I want to say this real quick, since you're asking about my history. You know, I had hit a point in my career where I was really doubting that this was destined for me, because I only want to work. I'm working with God. Like, if God ain't in it, I got nothing to do with God, then I don't have nothing to do with me. So that's why I worship. And so I was like, well, maybe God has given me a sign, because I had reached so many hard no's. You know, it's not just you don't hear anything. It's like, that's a hard no. And those hard no's are difficult because you begin to personalize it. It's not the same as, you know, me working for the phone company, which was an option. Like, my mother worked for the phone company. My mother's stepmother worked for the phone company. And so obviously, generationally, it's like, well, you can always get work at the post office. Well, right. For my family, you could always get work at the phone company. You know, you sit on the phone all day, you get a nice benefits, you know, you're smart enough, you could get a managerial position, you know. But I just knew I wanted to do something that was in alignment with my purpose. And I felt like that wasn't in alignment with my purpose. That was security for my family, for other people. And because my mom was so supportive of me, When I didn't do well on that final for my math test, I wound up really focusing on work. And then work wasn't generating profits. So it's like, what do I do? How do I support myself? I can't teach because I don't have a degree. I fast food wasn't it. And then I waiting tables was not an option because that's just not my ministry, my personality. I don't mind serving, but food is completely is a whole other thing. People don't like to tip. It's just a whole thing that comes with serving food. So I was like, you try to hustle and figure out how to make money. And so I'm like braiding hair and, I'm helping to sort files for people who could pay me. And I'm doing, I'm babysitting and I'm driving kids to school, working for wealthy fam Black families is, taking care of kids and just trying to figure out cash-based hustles. And there was a period where I had gotten dropped by my agent and my manager at the time. So it was the first time I'm in LA. I had done some television, I had done some work, but I hadn't really done enough to make an impact that was enough to sustain to sustain me. And I'm not saying a lavish lifestyle. Again, I have to remind people that there are actors in this business that are working class. So they make this 30,000, 20,000, maybe if they're lucky. Right? So there's 20 to 30,000. If you're lucky, you get to do this. If you're not blessed, luck lucky, if you're not, if that the timing isn't right for you to do that, then obviously you make below that, you don't get benefits at all. So you're trying to figure out how to get do all of that, how to get benefits. So I was like, well, I'll go back to school. And UCLA was a part of the plan. I was going to graduate with an African American studies degree. And my intention was to double major in psychology and minor in theater. And I booked a pilot in New York for HBO. And I remember sitting in, because it was like maybe 2 years. I had to take all of my credits because I had gone to so many different schools. They were like, you have to get into the California curriculum program. So, it's like I had to enroll in community college. And it was the first time as an adult I realized how much I enjoyed learning. I was looking forward to learning new things. I wasn't aware of a lot of our history. I had forgotten how to compose, my thoughts in a way that gave my voice power. You don't really do that a lot once you get out of high school or even in colleges, you have to take classes to really work on developing your voice through writing or developing your voice through oration. And so I could succeed with in a way that had nothing to do with all of the BS that comes with being in the business. It was like you study, you turn in your assignments and you get a grade. And I got straight A's the entire time I was there. I was excelling as a student. I was feeling very proud of myself. I was feeling extremely purposeful. And I book a pilot and it's in New York and I'm talking to my advisor and I can't even remember this lady's name, but I remember what she looked like. And she said, child, do you know that people come to school to get a job and you got a job and you worried about what you gonna do with UCLA? UCLA ain't going nowhere. If you don't go to New York and pursue your dream, you will be what they call a your enrollment will be deferred. So, because I felt like I was giving up. I felt like I was dropping out. I felt it was I had this negative connotation to it because of societal's influence on education and the value of education. What happens in life when you decide to work instead of educate yourself? And she was like, "No, this ain't that. This school is not going anywhere. Your education will always be available. You can always return as a student anytime you want, and learning never has to stop. So I just chose to educate myself in another capacity without the debt of a enrollment and, tuition and all that, and got back into the industry in a way that really just kind of propelled me forward. It just really gave me that extra boost and confidence. And I still have moments when I have to sit in prayer and silence and communicate with God in a way that is very personal, so that I never forget these things. But that's really, really been my journey, is through hard work. And I always say this one last thing, because I can belabor a subject. Chicago is a labor town. So it's embedded, and I'm three generations. I'm the third generation in Chicago. My mom was born in Chicago. My grandmother was born in Chicago. And I'm not quite sure about her mother. We kind of think it was Arkansas. That's when my family migrated to Chicago. But that's three long generations of the power of labor, So I'm used to hard work. It's conditioned in my mind that you want something, you work hard for it. But I needed to learn how to work smarter, particularly in life, where there are so many shortcuts that you can kind of take, or there are no doors built for the path that I'm on. So I have to create a lane, so to speak. So I feel like all of that helped me be able to feel confident enough to stand alongside Kerry Washington in a movie about real people and real women, and be proud of what we've accomplished.
Okay. I just have a few more questions. And this kind of relates to something you've been sharing. Becoming a successful actor is hard, painful, and can be full of disappointment. What advice would you give an aspiring Black female actress?
Follow your own path. Believe that there are many ways to succeed in this business, but the best way that I have found is having people around you who are just as supportive and believing in your dream as you do. My trainer wears this shirt that says, "Friends don't let friends dream alone." And I love the idea of that, because that's what this, any industry, but particularly one where we're not always in the forefront of a writer's mind when they're telling stories. We're the supportive player often, or even the background player often. You have to have people in your life that believe your dream too. So that means, unfortunately, sifting out any negative naysayers who believe that your dream is foolish, who may believe that it is only capable for other people. So that could be family members, that could be a loved one that you're in a romantic eros relationship with. It could be friends that you pick up along the way, or childhood friends who are afraid of losing you. Whomever those people are, who really are supportive, who want to invest, who don't mind sitting on the phone with you to encourage and inspire and remind you of what that special gift and talent is that only you can present to the world, that only God has chosen you to be the showcaser of. Having people support that is crucial. Yeah. More so than going to any university or getting any degree or having any connection.
And what you're sharing is really a life lesson. I'd ask you about acting, but it really, those, your lessons apply to all aspects of life, not just all careers. That, yeah.
I absolutely agree. My mother wanted to do a lot of things growing up and reminded me of the number of people who told her 500 reasons why she shouldn't do it. And she didn't want to raise me like that. I was privileged and blessed enough, and I appreciate it every day that God gave me a mother who said, I don't care what you want to do in life. My mother was like, and I'm going to be real. She said, if you wanted to be a sex worker, I would support that. And you're just going to be the best sex worker ever. She was like, I am not going to only be a conditional parent. She loved me unconditionally and she supported me every step of the way. Even when I didn't believe that this was destined for me, she said, have I ever told you that it wasn't? Because my mother is not. Now, listen, Doc, I got to share this story. My mother has voted against me quite a bit in some competitions. Okay. So she is not one of them parents who is like, my baby is the winner of all things invented. No. Okay. That was a dance contest. I'll never forget a dance contest. And you could not tell me that I wasn't the winner. I was voted the winner. It was a crowd participation. It was like American Idol, local American Idol, right? So it was all the people at the barbecue and at the picnic. The community came together. It was a dance contest between me and the boy, and I just hammered all over his ass. I was doing all kind of dances. She was like, "No, you weren't the best. He was the best." And all the people who voted for me were like, "No." And my mother taught me a lesson. She was like, "I'm not gonna always see you the way that other people see you if you're not your best, if it's not the greatest. I'm not gonna say it is just because you're my daughter." I felt like he was better. She even gave him, I think it was a cash prize. Well, I know it was a cash prize. I can't remember exactly how much she gave, but she even gave him the money. Now we had to have a talk about this later, of course. So now he's a boy. He would have got over it. He was crying. He would have got over it. He got beat by a girl. Yes, he's mad. But it just really taught me that, just because I'm doing this and she's supportive is because she sees something, is because she recognizes something. And you need people in your life to see when you can't see. There is something about you can't see the forest because you're in the trees, but people from the outside can absolutely, their purview is completely different, So in that, those people need to be extremely on your team, cheering in a way like you've never heard before, because you'll need it. Because those hard no's will you begin to feel like it's personal and it's really just business. This is a business that was designed to sell soap.
It's designed to sell soap.
Sell soap. That's why they called them soap operas and they called it a soap box. It was television programming was created so that advertisers of soap could market to housewives so that they could sell their products to women who sat at home, were privileged enough to sit at home and needed something to entertain them. And soap operas were created. So this is the whole idea of what television is, which is now obviously evolved in something to something much greater with film, with the television shows and the films now. This is what it's about. It's business. Unless you are always whole, unless you are a jerk, this is never personal. And I don't that I'm not I don't there's a lot of things people can call me, but that is typically not associated with my name. So a lot of the no's began to feel personal. And I needed to hear my sister friends remind me, and then me have seen things in them and that inspiring me, because it's all about reciprocity, right?
Is that what you saw in this role? Was that the kind of supportive and playing the role in the 6 AAA movie? Is that kind of the connection? You mentioned that it was a very impactful role. And so is that kind of the connection between your life path and the movie?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have always felt and believed that we are not islands. And I'm reminded often when I feel like I'm an independent woman who could do it by myself. And then I realize, oh, I have a whole mountain of paperwork that I need help with. It's the sisters who come to do that. You know, it's the sister friends, the relationships with women of, you know, all ages. It's not even like the your peers that you grew up with. It's just like-minded individuals who are on the same page, who desire the same thing, who are in the same light, walking in the same direction, focused on the same overcoming the same obstacles, you know, like just driven in the same way and wanting to see progress made in the most impactful, positive way. I've experienced that in my life. So, if nothing else, absolutely, those are parallels that I was able to see, be reminded of, and also be inspired by in this film. Even post this film, the kinds of relationships that have been cultivated because I am associated with a military film, I now am able to do a podcast with you. I'm able to meet women who have relationships with other, you know, professional women and accomplish so much. Just to commemorate these women now happen because women decided to do this as opposed to waiting for someone to, you know, you're talking what, 80 years?
Just about, yeah.
So how much longer will we gonna wait? You know what I mean? It's like
We hope that the gold medal is actually pressed while some of them are still alive. You know, and certainly looking forward to the six who are remaining having an opportunity to see this wonderful,
the
wonderful
film.
film. When is it going to be released, you know? Approximately.
Yeah, soon is all I know.
It's in the editing stage now, I presume. Is that where it is?
Yeah, well, once we wrap, then it's all post-production at this point.
Right.
So yeah, post-production is very it's an extensive process because obviously, yes, the editing part, but there's color correction and then you know, there's music that you want to incorporate into the movie to so that the viewer is on a journey when they're
With
watching the film. You know, like these are all key components. Certain scenes may have to be reshot, you know, and then it's all about timing. Again, that's why one of the things I learned in life about the value of patience is timing is crucial. It's a key component to God's big plan, right? The overall mission is timing. So that will also be a contributing factor of when it'll be released to make sure that it gets its proper exposure. Because if a film comes out, you know, listen, I they there's a there's a bit of film history about this as a movie, you know, called The Thing, which is one of my favorite. I don't know, Doc, are you into horror films?
I love horror films, yes.
Okay, perfect. Do you remember The Thing?
Yes. Well, the original and the
The
remake, yes.
remake, right? So the remake is the one I'm referencing. You know, obviously is because of the remake, everybody wanted to see it. But there was another movie that came out at the time about an alien invasion called E.T. So nobody went to see The Thing. Everybody went to see E.T. And it was all about the timing. So a lot of times, a lot of filmmakers decide to be more strategic about when they release films because if it's coming out, you know, you who gonna compete with the alien that
Right.
wants to go home and his kids. Like it's hard to compete. So it's all about timing. So as of right now, I don't know. And I wish I did because I would love to share that information with you. But as soon as I find out something, if I know it before you do, I would love for you to put that so that
Well,
your viewers could
yes.
watch it.
Well, some of us are hoping that maybe there'll be a pre-screening for some of the descendants beforehand, but who knows? We'll leave that to some of our advocates to work on,
Yes.
advocates who are working directly with the studios. So,
Yes. And
well,
support and love to the advocates, I want to just like right
absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think we're going to wrap up. Any final thoughts about the impact and legacy of the 6888? I mean, you've really addressed a lot in talking about how it impacted you, and continues to impact you. How important it is for young women in particular to know these stories. So I didn't know whether or not you had any final thoughts before we wrap up, because we've been going for a little while.
Yeah,
So.
we have. I'm long-winded, so I don't have nothing else to say.
I want to thank you for joining us tonight, discussing your role in the upcoming film and the importance of the 6888, and just sharing your story. I am very grateful, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing you in the theater.
Me too. I'm excited to be seen, but also I'm excited to be able to share my story because it is also my responsibility to share it. And you have given me the opportunity to do that, Doc, and I'm so grateful and appreciative of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I will share a quote from Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts. The beautiful part is we experience different agony in life, and we decide how we want to move forward, how we want to learn. My only direction is to rise. See you for our next show. We're working on some exciting footage from the June 6888 Legacy Tour to Scotland, England, and France, where we retrace the steps of the 6888 journey. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for podcasters.